Good day, and welcome to the quarterly All-EN call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Rob Papp. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for joining our quarterly All-EN call. We're thankful for your participation today, and we have a whole bunch of stuff to cover with you this afternoon, so we think this will be pretty informative for you. First, it's been a busy couple of months. Obviously, we're always fully engaged, but we wanted to report on a couple of things of note. First, we held a National Disability Forum on the Ticket to Work program. This occurred in Washington, D.C. We invited a panel of participants that are stakeholders of the program to offer comments for recommendations to enhance the program, and particularly we were seeking to enhance the regulatory recommendations that we have been working on. We are hoping to come out with a new regulatory recommendation to enhance the program, make the program work better for everybody. The participants consisted of representatives from the employment networks, as well as vocational rehabilitation. We also had representation from our PABs as well. And we had a member of the public who was a ticket program participant participate also. So the participants provided comments. We took questions from folks on the phone as well as members of the audience, and it was well represented. We are actually in a process of consolidating the comments and adding those to the comments we received through our advance notice of proposed rulemaking submitted last year, and we're in the process of pulling all the comments through the notice of proposed rulemaking as well as the forum together into one consolidated package. And the process from here in terms of the regulation is to brief our executives and further refine our rulemaking changes that we are putting together, and then we will put something in the Federal Register. But we will keep you posted on the events relative to the further processing for the regulatory changes. We'll keep you in the loop on that. The second thing I want to talk about briefly was our participation in the Council of State Vocational Rehabilitation Administrators Conference, CSAVR. We participated in this about a month ago. The conference occurs twice a year. We participated in the April conference. Our staff conducts training to the VRs in terms of the new VR staff that is hired, and we train them on processing cost reimbursement. That is the word I'm struggling with, process. So, and we also gave them an update on our automation of the cost reimbursement process as well. The other thing I wanted to note about that is we had a session regarding Partnership Plus. And for those organizations, this is what Partnership Plus is for those who may not be familiar. Once the state VR closes the case for the beneficiary, the Ticket to Work beneficiary, after the beneficiary's been working, there's an agreement between a VR and employment networks to hand the person off, so to speak, transfer services from the VR to the employment network. But as you can imagine, this requires building of relationships, getting cooperation from the state vocational rehabilitation agencies, and finding good partners in the employment network community. So we are constantly engaged in promoting this effort. We encourage employment networks to consider Partnership Plus agreements. And we continue to move these efforts forward. So I wanted to promote this with you, and we will probably have subsequent discussions through our future All EN calls about Partnership Plus agreements that are in place now. We continue to encourage the vocational rehabilitation agencies that aren't engaged in this to consider participating and finding good employment network partners. So this is a collaboration that is important. It helps the beneficiary. It's a win-win between state VR. It benefits the employment network, but most importantly, it benefits our beneficiaries because they get the ongoing support necessary once they go back to work after they complete the VR services. So I just wanted to put that out there for your consideration. If you have questions, please feel free towards the end of the call to weigh in with any questions that you have, and we will forward additional information as well. I wanted to note a programmatic change that's fairly significant for your consideration, and really it's a change in our business process that's going to be beneficial across the board. And this is the transition of our RFA process into what we're going to refer to as the New Ticket Program Agreement, or TPA, process. And a couple things I want to highlight for your consideration regarding this new process is that we are transitioning away from the RFA process, which consists of the current blanket purchase agreement, to what we refer to as the ticket program agreements. We've been working on this change for over a year, and it reflects our efforts to provide increasing flexibility and efficiency in the way we administer the Ticket to Work program. The ticket program agreement changes will clarify our policy. They'll reduce duplication and result in an increase in EN responsiveness and active participation. As a condition for your continuation as an employment network, we'll ask you to review and approve a new ticket program agreement with revised terms and conditions within 60 days of receiving the email that we're going to send to you. You will not need to submit a new EN application, nor will you need to reapply for suitability. We'll set up a separate call to discuss the changes in processes shortly after the ticket program agreement has been released. It has not been released as of yet. We will keep you posted on the date that this change is going to occur. We're also going to post a frequently asked question on the YourTicketToWork.com website after we release the ticket program agreement. Our purpose for right now is to give you a heads up that this is coming, and we will continue the communication as we move towards this new process. So the next item on the agenda is the Find Help tool. I'm going to skip and come back to training package and posters. That's going to be, I'm going to hand that off to Carol, but I want to talk briefly about our changes to the Find Help tool, which you may have noticed. We, in response to many comments that we have received about the Find Help tool, we've worked very hard on this issue with Maximus to make this a better, more user-friendly tool. A message was sent to you, I believe, on May the 10th, 2017, and the summarizing the changes to the tool. But the new Find Help tool will allow beneficiaries to access a directory of service providers that they can select based on the type of organization and the type of services that they're seeking. And really, the tool has been enhanced in four primary ways. We've made the search results more simplified to make it easier to use. Each service provider will only be listed once in the initial search results. The user will then be able to select an option to see all of the office locations for a particular service provider. We offer users to choose now whether they seek in-person service provider or whether they are whether they prefer services virtually. So the beneficiary can choose the type of service they want, or they can select all. They can choose whether in-person, virtual, or any service provider, any type of service provider. The as I indicated earlier, the beneficiary can go into the tool and select by the type of services they seek, so they can provide, they can search by EN, vocational rehabilitation, WIPA, or PABS organization. And we remove the state-based search by focusing on zip code-based searches. So we eliminate the confusion for beneficiaries that live near one or more border states so that the search can be conducted by zip code versus state. So we think that these changes will improve the experience of the beneficiaries, help them find the right type of services they need in an easier manner. We encourage you to go in and take a look at the new FindHelp tool enhancements. Again, we'll take any questions or comments that you have pertaining to this towards the end of the call. So I've talked a lot. Without further ado, I'm going to turn this over to Carol Dempsey. She is leading some efforts in regards to some training packages that we're trying to engage and enhance our field components and get the message out and improve training and the messaging of the Ticket to Work program. And Carol will give us some more details about that.
Hi, good afternoon. We are putting together a training package for the field office to give the field office some additional training on the Ticket to Work program. We expect this training package to go out within the next 2 to 3 months, as it takes us a little while because everything needs to be approved by operations. This training package will include an introduction to Ticket to Work for the field office, an overview of the Ticket to Work with links, a video, and phone numbers in the introduction. Also, we will have a poster sent out to every field office with Ticket to Work information, with the Choose to Work website, Ticket to Work helpline numbers, and we are requesting that the poster be hung in the reception area so all beneficiaries can see it. Okay. Also included in this package will be a Meet Ben video. Field officers will now have access to this video as they didn't have the access before. And they viewed the video on the second week in April, and now we're going to have them view it again with this training package. And this will review the training and actually walk them through someone applying for Ticket to Work. Lastly, we would like to include a desk guide. This will include a more comprehensive list of websites, phone numbers, ordering handouts to Ticket to Work, handouts, and it will include a decision tree to walk claim representatives, claim service representatives, through the Ticket to Work process in a detailed manner. And we hope to have that out in 2 to 3 months. And
back to me, right? All right. So thanks, Carol, for that. Again, ongoing efforts to enhance our field components' knowledge and education about Ticket to Work so that they're able to communicate with the beneficiaries at the field office, relative to those things that are Ticket to Work. So ongoing efforts, a lot of hard work being done there, and I want to thank Gary's team and Carol and the folks associated with that for their efforts. So at this point, I want to tee up our guest speakers who are going to present today and thank them for participating. So the introduction here is for Work Without Limits, an administrative employment network. Just by means of background, the Work Without Limits Administrative Employment Network started in 2014 and currently partners with 12 community organizations who provide job placement services to individuals with disabilities. The administrative EN provides a high level of support to these organizations, including benefits counseling and long-term follow-up services. In less than 3 years, this EN has generated more than $220,000 in ticket payments. Alexis Henry is director of the Disability Health and Employment Policy Unit at UMass Medical School's Center for Health Policy and Research, where Work Without Limits is housed. Alexis has over 30 years of experience in disability services and research and works closely with Peter Travisano to support the administrative EN. Peter Travisano is the EN project director and has more than 7 years of experience as a certified community work incentives coordinator and more than 20 years of experience in the vocational rehabilitation field. So without further ado, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Alexis and Peter.
Thank you, Rob.
So this is Alexis Henry. I'll kick it off, and thank you for having us this afternoon. So what I'm going to do is give you just a little bit of the background story of the Work Without Limits Administrative Employment Network, and then I'll turn it over to Peter to give you more of the details of how we operate. So as Rob said, we are an administrative employment network, and we partner with community-based employment service providers and voc rehab providers in our state in Massachusetts to help them maximize the revenue that's available through the Ticket to Work program. So our goal with our community organization partners is really to help them, take advantage of the revenue that's available for the ticket program. And for the beneficiaries who get referred to us from our community partners who are ticket holders and assign their tickets to our EN, you know, our focus is really on providing those beneficiaries with a very high level and intensive service, an intensive version of benefits and work incentive counseling, including ongoing support for as long as they need it to really help people, you know, pursue their goals for self-sufficiency and support them all along the way in the path to higher earnings. So that's our commitment to our beneficiaries, is to really support them in that pursuit. So I'm going to go to the next one. So just a little bit of our background. So the Administrative Employment Network is housed at the University of Massachusetts Medical School within the Disability Health and Employment Policy Unit. And we manage an overall initiative called Work Without Limits. So the background of Work Without Limits is we began with funding from CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, through the Medicaid Infrastructure and Comprehensive Employment Opportunities Grant. Some of you might have been familiar with the MIG or MICEO grants that many states had for really a number of years. The program itself was about 11 or so years of funding. And the goals of the MIG grants were to enhance the infrastructure within states to address barriers to employment for people with disabilities and engage in really a whole range of infrastructure enhancement and systems change activities to promote employment opportunities. So we were the MIG for Massachusetts, and Work Without Limits is really the initiative that was, the development of Work Without Limits was really supported by that funding through the MIG grants. As those of you who had been involved with MIG know, that ended in 2011, 2012. And so we have been able to sustain some very key activities through a variety of mechanisms since the MIG funding ended. But Work Without Limits is a statewide network of collaborative partners and employers that are really committed to changing the face of employment for people with disabilities in our state. We have a very passionate group of collaborators that work with us and employers who are really committed to diversifying their workforces by including people with disabilities. And so we have kind of a set of key activities. We do a tremendous amount of work directly with employers to help them look at their hiring practices and policies related to employment. We have an online job board called Jobs Without Limits. That is a job search opportunity specifically for workers with disabilities who are looking for employment in Massachusetts. We have a WIPA project here called Benny Plan. So we provide, obviously, direct services to beneficiaries. And then we also do a lot of training for community providers on a variety of topics related to employment for people with disabilities. And then the Work Without Limits AEN is another one of our initiatives under Work Without Limits. So we chose the AEN model because of our history and our work with, you know, community partners over the years that we had the MIG funding. One, we got to know really, I would say almost all of the employment service providers that are operating through community-based programs in our state. And we knew from that experience that many of them had either they didn't have the resources to manage an employment network on their own. They might have attempted it, but really couldn't sustain it. And it was pretty clear to us that this, that people were not taking advantage of the ticket program because they didn't have the internal capacity to support the administration of the program. And so, because it was really consistent with our overall mission of promoting employment opportunities for people with disabilities in our state and supporting our partners and collaborating with our partners, we said to ourselves, well, maybe we could take this on. And we work in a very large division of the medical school that does a lot of partnering with state agencies and community organizations. And we actually approached one of our sister centers here at the medical school that does a lot of work around federal revenue maximization for state agencies and community organizations, and we approached them about partnering with us to help us get an administrative employment network off the ground, and they were very intrigued by the idea. It fit very consistently with their mission, so they provided us with some initial support to hire Peter and get the AEN off the ground. And we're now moving to a program that is totally self-sufficient. And why don't I stop there, and I'm going to turn over to Peter.
Okay, thank you. So why don't we move on to slide, we'll skip that slide. I think Alexis discussed that. So why don't we move on to slide 7.
Okay. Yeah.
So about or slide 8. Yep, thank you. We were approved as an EN in September of 2014. And since that time, we've added 12 partners. And there's a we'll talk about our partners in just a moment. But we've been pretty careful about our ticket assignments. We've assigned 119 tickets, but the majority of our tickets are folks that are working at trial work level, or actually the highest number of folks are actually working at the SGA level at this point. We've generated over $200,000 in ticket revenue to date, and our expected revenue for FY 2018 is $225,000. So I would expect by the end of 2018 that we will actually have generated about $500,000 in ticket revenue, which would be really great for us. We can move on to the next slide. And our partners include 10 community-based organizations that are providing vocational rehabilitation to people with a variety of disabilities. In our case, there's a strong number of folks that are working with people with mental health disabilities, but they definitely include a wide variety of disabilities within that group. We have one-stop career center. We're looking to partner with more. And we've just brought on a statewide peer-operated network specializing in training and certification to mental health peer specialists. And we think that that's a great group of people to be working with. And these folks are earning at a pretty substantial level and in many cases are really looking to become self-sufficient. We can move on to the next slide. And so the services we provide to our partners is IWP development. So we generally do all the work in terms of developing the IWP. We take care of the ticket assignment through the portal and working with Maximus. We develop earnings documentation, and that's something that we work with all of our ticket holders really very regularly. Anybody that we believe is working, especially working at a billable level, we're reaching out to those folks either by generally by mail, requesting earning documentation, and the overwhelming majority of payments we're getting through the portal and not through auto pay. So we're getting those payments really very quickly due to our relationships that we have with our ticket holders. And I think that those relationships are really built on the fact that they work with us very closely around their benefit planning needs. So they keep a pretty close contact with the AEN because they find that pretty beneficial. So we can move on to slide 11. So as we mentioned, we submit payment requests. We distribute payments to our partners on a regular basis, and as we mentioned, we provide extensive benefit counseling with long-term follow-up services, including at minimum quarterly outreach to our assigned ticket holders. We're on to slide 12. And simple referral process. Basically, our idea is that we want to make this easy peasy for our partners. I think the ticket program has been complicated. We basically want to deal with the complications and make things work very simply for our partners in a way that is really pretty smooth. So our partners basically fill out a simple one-page referral form. Along with the referral form are the Social Security releases, the 3288s, which allow us to get copies of the benefit planning queries, which many of you are familiar with. That's what's basically needed to provide accurate benefit counseling to folks. We certainly welcome self-referrals, and we get some of those through the Find Help sources and through some of our contacts throughout the state. We try to move very quickly. We're generally able to provide benefit counseling and ticket assignment within 1 month of referral. Moving to slide 13. So one thing that we take very seriously, and I know Alexis mentioned that we have Benny Plan, which is a WIPA project, also housed at and Work Without Limits, is maintaining strict compliance with the WIPA firewall requirements. We do make referrals to Benny Plan and other WIPA projects for ongoing benefit and work incentive counseling as needed. We do not receive referrals from Benny Plan. No Benny Plan staff work out the Work Without Limits AEN. And we have never assigned a ticket based on contact with Benny Plan. So we try to keep those really separate. The motion in terms of referrals is always from the AEN to Benny Plan, which we try to really stay strict with that. Moving to the next slide. Our staffing is pretty lean. There's Alexis and myself, so the DHEP director who provides administrative oversight to the program. I'm the AEN project manager, and I also provide the benefit counseling and partner liaison. And we have two part-time administrative staff who process referrals and manage our database.
We also get some support from our center's finance staff who assist with the distribution of payments to our partners.
Right. But it's a small operation, but we stay pretty busy, and I think we reach out to our folks really regularly.
We do have a plan in FY, and our fiscal year begins July 1, so we're hoping to bring on another part-time person as a program manager like Peter to expand, because we know that there's definitely additional opportunities for other partners in the state. So we're looking to grow the AEN and think we'll be able to bring on a half-time person starting in July. That's our goal anyway.
And next slide is basically questions. So just in short, I think the AEN model is proven to be, I think, great for us, great for our area. Actually, we're looking to even go beyond the state of Massachusetts. But for organizations that want to in some way participate in the ticket program and also provide their folks with a high level of benefit counseling, we can basically take care of a lot of the administrative burden that the ticket program, you know, sometimes has with smaller organizations, generate payments, and provide good service to their beneficiaries.
Hey, thank you so much, for Alexis and Peter. What we're going to do now, we're going to ask the operator, Andrew, if you could please open up the line for a few questions for this portion of the presentation only.
Absolutely. If you'd like to ask a question on today's conference, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And we have our first question. Please state your name followed by your question.
Hi, I'm Andrea Satira, and I'm with the Trans-Am Employment Network out of the Washington, D.C. area. My question has to do with, how did you get started as an administrative EN? I mean, how did you approach your community partners? Were they already ENs, or did they become ENs and then you took over the administration? How did you get this whole thing started?
Yeah, most of our partners are not ENs. A couple of them are. So, you know, because we had really strong relationships with a variety of organizations, we actually began with one large part of community-based organization that has contracts from our State Department of Mental Health and our State Department of Developmental mm-hmm. Services to provide employment supports to their clients. So I have to say it was an idea that we had sort of brewing in our minds for quite a while. We reached out to the administrative employment networks that we knew were happening across the country to learn a little bit about how they did it. And so we approached this large vendor organization to say, you know, let's talk about how we would build this. And our model was always, it was always pretty clear that the piece that our community partners really couldn't manage very effectively was the administrative management of the ticket program. And so we, again, we approached an in-house center to provide us really with some seed money so that we could actually hire Peter, so that we could, you know, not just, you know, submit the application to, you know, our business plan, but work with that large vendor partner to kind of work out the processes. We have a memorandum of understanding with all of our partners, so it required working with our compliance and attorney, our attorneys and compliance officers within our center, working with finance, making sure that we had, you know, working with SSA, you know, the security clearance, I mean, all the sort of pieces that you have to have in place. We were able to launch with this first large partner, and they, with them, we worked out processes really aiming to get as efficient as possible. It does require, when we bring on a new partner, to really orient their staff to what the ticket program is about, who is probably, you know, who's the right person to refer, how to do the referral. And so, you know, Peter developed trainings. I mean, there was a lot of upfront work, and frankly, we would not have been able to do it if we didn't have some support in-house.
Right, right. So when you reached out to the other administrative ENs, were they open to giving you how they started? I'm asking because I think that this is the next step for me, for our EN. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, thinking, how do I grow this EN and do it effectively? And one of the points for me is becoming an admin EN for other ENs. So yep. You didn't go to other ENs, though. You went to community partners.
I mean, a lot of our community partners had either attempted to be an EN, had been an EN,
right.
had left it lapsed. So, I mean, we were not, say, some of our partners are ENs. And basically, they join our EN, and we serve as the umbrella for all of our partners.
Okay. And do you do everything, start to finish, from the IWP to the job placement and then post, you know, follow-along services?
They do basically all of the employment services. We do the IWP benefits counseling. But they provide, basically, our goal is for our partner organizations to do what they already are doing, which is to provide, you know, job development, career development, job placement, and follow-along supports with people. And we provide, develop the IWP in partnership with the beneficiary. We provide intensive benefits counseling,
and
the administrative management.
Right, and the generation.
Okay. All right. I just got to jump in and figure it out. Okay, thank you. Thank you. And if I wanted to get in touch with you, how would I do that?
We're on the slide here.
For some reason that the slides didn't come up for me. So
you can contact me at peter.travisano, TRAVISANO, @umassmed.edu.
EDU.
We'll post that in the chat for
thank you.
Not able to.
I have that up. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the question, Andrea, very much. Andrea, we'll take another question.
Okay, we have our next question. Please state your name followed by your question.
Hi, my name is Peter Mead. I'm an Employment Network. And,
Hi, Peter.
I'm a fan of what you're doing. I think it's a great concept, and I'm really happy that you're having success in it. It occurred to me as I was seeing about your model that when you're receiving self-referrals, do you do a review with those people just to make sure that you're not actually talking with somebody who is from one of your partners who just doesn't know that?
Yeah, we're really careful about that.
Yeah, and that can happen. And if somebody's, already affiliated with one of our partners, then we'll make sure that the partner gets the split and the referring information is handled appropriately.
And then that sounds like a natural opportunity to also deepen your partnership with that partner. It's like, hey, we got the surprise when your people called us, and hey, why don't you develop your orientation session for them so that they've got a better understanding that our services are available. And that sounds like a natural spot to kind of take the partnership a little deeper.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense. And by the way, thank you, Peter. In the very beginning, you were one of the really encouraging people in getting this thing off the ground.
And look at you now. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you for your question, Peter. Okay, we'll continue with our agenda, and we'll hand it over to Kara.
Good afternoon, everyone. We just wanted, I know a blast was sent to everybody, but we just wanted to reiterate that there is a new IWP guide on the Ticket to Work website. It has all the 9 necessary elements that are currently in your BPA. What we tried to do was streamline it and hopefully made it more simple for ENs and clear to fill out. But just as a reminder, when we put up an IWP form, it's a guideline. You don't have to use it. You just have to make sure that you have the 9 elements that are in your BPA outline and that you keep those. And that's really it. I mean, we hope we made this. We've gotten a couple questions on it, and we hope we've made it easier and more succinct for you. And next is Carol Cohen, who's going to talk about WIPAs.
Hello, everybody. This is Carol Cohen, and welcome. Just wanted to make a few comments. I'm delighted that 2 of my staff, Terry Uttermullen and Marjorie McIver, will be speaking to you about specific efforts and exciting efforts that we are moving forward with. I just wanted to remind you, I know you know this, but to remind you, we do have 80 three WIPAs out there that cover the country and provide support services for beneficiaries who are on a clear work path. They provide very intensive benefits counseling, and we encourage you to, if you are not already, to become familiar with your local WIPA. If you haven't reached out to them, especially some of the newer ENs, please do. If you need information on what the name of the WIPA is and who to reach out to, and that's the Work Incentive Planning and Assistance Project, WIPA, we're happy to provide you with a list. But we really do want to encourage cooperation and collaboration between our ENs and our WIPAs, because after all, we're all part of the same continuum trying to provide a path to full employment for our beneficiaries. So I just wanted to make that pitch. As you also know, we have a very active helpline, and the individuals who answer the calls are all trained by the same contractor, that's Virginia Commonwealth University, VCU. They're all trained by the same contractor that trains the WIPA staff to provide the intensive counseling. The helpline customer service reps, while they don't provide the intensive counseling, and they would refer individuals to the WIPA who require that kind of service, they can provide fairly extensive level of information and referral and some very basic kinds of guidance and kind of facts based on the kinds of questions that the beneficiary has. So we also encourage you to use the helpline. So I just wanted to say that up front. We're very proud of the WIPA program, and again, we encourage you to reach out to them. We also have the PABS program, the Protection and Advocacy for Beneficiaries of Social Security, and these are our legal advocates who support individuals with disabilities who require some legal guidance, legal advice, or information. If, for example, someone has been denied their rights or denied due process, we would encourage you to reach out to your state PABs. We have that information for you, too. I believe that you have that, but if you do not, we will be sure to get that to you, the list of both of our WIPAs, our 83 WIPAs, and our 57 PABs. So just wanted to say that. And I will now turn it over to Marjorie. Marjorie has a very interesting presentation to discuss with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Hi, everybody. As Carol said, my name is Marjorie. I'm a project officer, Marjorie McKeever, here in Ordez. I work mostly with the WIPAs and PABs. And I just want to share some information about a change in how and when the Ticket to Work helpline refers beneficiaries to the WIPAs. So from now on, beneficiaries calling the helpline will be referred to a WIPA only if they meet the following criteria. The beneficiary has a job offer, has an interview in the last 30 days or one coming up in the next 2 weeks, and we will continue to refer youth. So as you can see, the focus is now on beneficiaries who are already working or where work is imminent. And we did this really just for efficiency and just to be more consistent with the WIPA requirements. Now, as Carol mentioned, the customer service reps at the helpline can answer questions about the effect of work on benefits, general work incentives, and provide guidance. And the reps have always been great at providing general information, but in gearing up for this change in protocol, we did have some more intensive training with, they had more intensive training with Virginia Commonwealth University. And we instituted this change at the end of March. So it's been up and running for almost 2 months now, and we've been receiving really positive responses. So that is my update on the WIPA protocol, the new helpline protocol. And now I'm going to pass the call over to Terry Odermullen.
Good afternoon, everybody, or good morning for anybody who's out west. I just have a quick couple things. Virginia Commonwealth University has recently begun offering an introductory web course. And
this is an introduction to benefits counseling
and the work incentives.
It's very basic,
but it's helpful for those of you
who want to understand what work incentives planning is
and does, or what some of the work incentives are that might affect the beneficiaries with whom you work.
They've given the course a couple times. They've had some pretty good reviews from
participants, and they will be offering it again, but
the most recent registration had quite a bit of enthusiasm, and
so that registration is closed, I believe, and then we will have more on the VCU website after July.
The VCU website is www.vcu-ntc.org, and I believe you have that in the chat box or in your handout. And wanted to encourage staff that are not going to be benefits counselors or who want to see what benefits counseling is about to participate in this class. It's free. It is there is an instructor, Lucy Miller, who did the recordings, but she also monitors the web course. And it is, as I said, it is an introduction. So this benefits counseling is a very complicated field, and it takes a lot of work for people to learn the intricacies of how all the benefits fit together. This class does not prepare people to be benefits counselors. It prepares you to understand what benefits counselors do and the things that are out there that they might be able to help people with. So I'm going to pass this now to Patrice McLean. Patrice?
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Patrice McLean. I'm a project officer in the Office of Research Demonstration and Employment Support, and I wanted to provide a brief update to something that we spoke about at the last All-EN call. We're running three proofs of concept. One is the benefits. I'll start with the benefits planning query proof of concept. And just for the sake of anyone who wasn't here last quarter, we are running a proof of concept where we have centralized the operation of providing benefit planning queries to participating organizations. And those organizations include employment networks, WIPA organizations that we just heard of, and some vocational rehabilitation offices. We implemented this proof of concept on March 4th, 2015, with just over 20 organizations, hoping to better the response times and also see what research we could provide that would demonstrate the need for a new and improved BPQI application. Since our inception in March 2015, we've satisfied over 24,000 requests with an average processing time of just over 4 business days. We've expanded to include 45 participating organizations. The goals of this proof of concept are to provide data that show that centralizing the BPQI production will allow us to respond to all test organizations in better timing than we are able to at times from our local field offices. We'd also like to create an improved BPQI application because the current system uses screen scraping technology, which is an ad hoc technology that we didn't expect to use for this type of volume. So from time to time, the BPQI application gives us, for lack of better words, gives us some trouble, and so it slows down the production for lots of our field offices and even our proof of concept. Since the last call, we've had an increase in our internal processing time. Our cumulative processing time is still just over 4 days because we've been able to have the slow processing time over the course of the proof of concept. But our recent processing time has an average of 9 calendar days, and that is because we've implemented a quality assurance process. We noticed that the current BPQI application sometimes pulls the wrong information, and so our team has to employ workarounds in order to be able to produce a correct BPQI. And so we've implemented a quality assurance process where each and every BPQI is being reviewed before we release it to our participants. We do hope that we can reduce this processing time by hopefully adding additional resources or making changes to our internal process. We are not planning to expand the BPQI proof of concept at the current time, but we do keep a wait list of organizations who are interested in participating. If you'd like more information or would like to participate in the proof of concept, please email ordes, ordes.bpqy.poc at ssa.gov. Again, that's ordes.bpqy.poc at ssa.gov. And just as a note from last call, I did receive all of the requests to join the BPQR proof of concept last quarter. I did send responses to each organization letting everyone know that we have added you to our list of prospective ERs. So if you've already sent me an email, you don't have to send a follow-up email this time. I'm going to move forward to the wage reporting proof of concept and then the marketing proof of concept and then take any questions regarding any of the three after that time. We implemented the wage reporting proof of concept on October 31st, 2016, and we have taken the information submitted by employment networks only, such as pay stubs or any wage verification that you receive from a beneficiary or an employer. We entered that into the system as regular, entered into the portal, for example. We take that information, our ticket program manager enters it into a system called eWork that is accessible by our field offices. Our field offices then have that information and can make timely adjudicative decisions based on the earnings of those beneficiaries. We have expanded our operations to include 28 participating organizations. Since the inception of this proof of concept, we have entered 142 work reports for 137 beneficiaries and 6,665 pay stubs for a total of 574 beneficiaries. And all of those records have our field office is supplied with information and pay stubs to support this information so that they can make timely adjudicative decisions. The goals of this proof of concept, of course, are to reduce overpayments by making timely decisions. We'd also like to expedite payments to our employment networks, such as those who are providing service to beneficiaries. We do hope at some point to expand to all 600, to all employment networks, and we will be expanding soon. For more information or to request to be a part of this proof of concept, please email ordes.wagereporting.poc at ssa.gov. Again, that's ordes.wagereporting.poc at ssa.gov. The last proof of concept that I'm going to speak about is the marketing proof of concept. This operation was implemented on April 7, 2016, and includes 28 participating organizations. We take requests from these organizations of what type of data they'd like so that they can market their services to beneficiaries. And that is information such as individuals by zip code or by age, so that our employment networks can then reach out to those beneficiaries in an attempt to help them to either obtain or sustain employment. We finished our first round of sending data to all 28 of those organizations, and we're now at the point where we are sending a second round of data to all of those organizations. We've also changed some of the pretenses of the proof of concept. We do hope to expand this at some point. Right now, it is a proof of concept. We want to collect data that happened as a result of our working with these 28 organizations, but it is our goal to be able to send marketing information to employment networks all over the country at some point. The proof of concept is it exists really to make sure that we can collect data to support how important this really is. For information on the marketing proof of concept, you can email marketing.support at ssa.gov. Again, that's marketing.support at ssa.gov. And that concludes the update that I have, and if there are any questions, we can take them at this time.
Operator, we'll turn it over for any questions for regarding the POCs. I want to clarify.
And we do have a question. Please state your name followed by your question.
Hi, my name is Peter Mead again. Hi, folks. So in regard to the proof of concept for BPQY, one question that my ticket users have started asking me is, what is my disability on record? Can you get that from Social Security? And my understanding is that right now we have to get that from the field office, that that's not available through the centralized BPQI process. Is that correct? Is it possible to add disability on record to the BPQI that the central process provides?
That's a great question, Peter. I would have to turn to our policy folks. I would assume that we would not be able to disclose, because that is medical information. And the BPQI has more information regarding work and the use of work incentives. We would have to consult with our policy team on whether or not we could add that once we're creating a newer BPQI. At this time, I know that it's not possible to add that information, but we could always consult with our policy team to see if that is a possibility. And if there's anyone from policy who'd like to weigh in, please feel free.
Patrice, this is Carol Dempsey. You're correct. They can't give out the disability.
Okay. Thank you, Carol.
And so does that also include with the BPQI? If I send that into to the field office, does the same logic apply that the field office can't provide that information on a BPQI either?
Correct.
Is there a separate form for requesting that information?
No, they won't. They won't give that to you.
Oh, okay. But we could tell the beneficiaries, look, that's locked up to us as ENs, but you can call the field office and ask for that information, right?
Not to my knowledge, but we would have to. We can try to get you some clarification on that. That is a policy question, Peter. So we'll note that and get some kind of policy feedback for you on that.
Very good. Thank you.
Sure.
And as a reminder, that is *1 to signal for questions. We do have another question. Go ahead and state your name, followed by your question.
Steve Radlinger. I had a question. What is the best, I noticed the job board on your website that you put in place to, find a centralized source for employers to hire people with disabilities. I'm just wondering, what is the best way to engage employers in your experience that are eager to interview and hire job seekers with disabilities?
Just as this, Rob, just clarification, is that's for our Work Without Limits presenters?
Yeah, your website, workwithoutlimits.org, and you talk a lot about employer engagement, and, I've always been interested in engaging with employers that are eager to, hire people with disabilities, and just wondering what your approach that you've used that's you found effective.
Hi, this is Peter from Work Without Limits. Am I coming through there?
Yes.
So we've worked extensively, and this goes back, as Alexis was mentioning, to our time with the MIG grant, but worked extensively with employers to help them in a lot of ways, in particular with onboarding people with disabilities and that type of thing. So through those relationships, we were able to determine who was interested in participating in the job board. A lot of employers actually really were. And so we were essentially what that allows us to do is use their HR job page and post that through Jobs Without Limits, and then provide guidance to beneficiaries who are looking to get to work and help them navigate those pages and find a job, and also work with the employers to let them know, who might be interested in working with them. So does that help?
It does. It seems like there has to be some active engagement with employers in the community to
right. Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of there was quite a long period of legwork before we felt like we could begin to start thinking about this.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you very much for that question, Steve. What we'll do at this time, we'll go ahead and complete our agenda by handing it over to Jamie for the outreach section, and then we'll have all questions open for all. Thank you.
Thanks, Adele, and good afternoon, everyone. This is Jamie Pendergrass. I am the Program Outreach Manager for the Ticket Program Manager, And I'm going to share a couple of upcoming events and other news with you this afternoon. First and foremost, our next Work Incentive Seminar Event webinar is next Wednesday on May 24th. We'll be presenting information for Ticket to Work for people who have a mental illness, and the time of the webinar is 3 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll talk about the role of employment in the mental health recovery process and the therapeutic, financial, and social benefits of work, in addition to Ticket to Work and Work Incentive information. I will chat out a link once I'm done talking about registering for the WISE online at www.choosework.net/WISE. We welcome you to register, but more than that, we also encourage you to help spread the word about the upcoming WISE event with your clients and anyone who might be interested in learning more information about that. And I will send out a link to the flyer as well as the chat box. We're also happy to share that we've recently published a new success story. Jesus has spina bifida, and he started his career as a volunteer, and through that volunteer work in the Ticket to Work program, he found full-time employment and is now one of our featured success stories, and I will share the link to his story as well. We're very excited to share that story, too. And lastly, I would like to call for volunteers. We're always looking for folks to present on our webinars, to serve as guest bloggers, to provide us with success story leads. If you have any information, any expertise you'd like to share on a broader scale, please do contact us. And my email address is jamielpendergraft@maximus.com, and I'll chat that out as well. And now I will turn it over to Adele for questions.
Thanks, Jamie. Andrew, if you can go ahead and open up the lines for questions on all topics that we've discussed today. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we look forward to your questions.
And just as a reminder, that is star one to signal for questions, and we'll take our first question now. Again, please state your name and follow up with your question.
Hi, this is Paula Vieille. I'm really excited about some of the changes with contract and also the RPM. And I guess I missed a couple of dates. There's still room for comment on some of the new initiatives. And then I then I wanted to find out about the proof of concept, the BBQIs. It's recently come to us that it's difficult. They don't want to take electronic signatures on the BBQIs, and I'm just wondering if there was a reason for this new rule, or if it was just a misunderstanding, or.
Good afternoon, Paula. This is Patrice. It's not a new rule. We've never accepted electronic signatures. The signature doesn't have to be wet and that we need the official form, but we need it to be signed and at least scanned in. What we've begun receiving is a scripted font digital signature. And as per our policy, we can't accept that on our 3288 release form. So it's not just BPQY proof of concept policy. It's policy across the board at Social Security. It's possible that before we implemented our quality assurance process that we weren't noticing or paying enough, that we missed a few of those and were able to actually process them. But, of course, you know, with our quality assurance process, we're catching a lot of things that might not have been noticed beforehand.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And, you know, the volume has certainly changed and lots of, you know, security changes constantly. I mean, that's kind of all right. Well, thank you. Thank you for the information.
Oh, no problem at all.
And we do have another question. Again, please state your name followed by your question.
My name is John DePlessis. My question is that we had several candidates that were eligible for federal employment. But, however, they were requesting a Schedule A, and because employment networks are not eligible to do Schedule A letters, those individuals were not able to obtain that employment. So my question is that what would it take for employment networks to be able to do Schedule A letters for candidates that they may have that qualify for federal employment? They tried to refer me to vocational rehab. However, I spoke to vocational rehab, and they would not do a Schedule A on my clients because they were not actually clients of a vocational rehab. So that's a very heartbreaking. So I'd like to see how can we, some kind of way, to, you know, modify that, that employment networks be able to do Schedule A's for federal employment for individuals that are qualified.
Thank you for the question. We're going to have to take that one back and do some research on that, and we'll reach out to you and touch base and follow up. But none of us here have an immediate answer for you, unfortunately, but we will follow up.
Okay, Stu, I sincerely appreciate it.
And we have our next question. Please go ahead.
Yes, I have several questions. My name is Richard Burnett. I'm at the Disabled Resource Center. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. The benefits plan inquiry we're talking about is one that states things like their medical review cycle line, what they're getting on their benefit, whether it's SSI or SSDI, and so forth. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. I have had no problem getting BPQIs for my beneficiaries. I never had to have them sign anything. And on top of everything else, if they want to know what their medical, their exact medical disability is, they call the 1-800 number, the 1-800-772-1213, and all they have to do is if they don't understand the concept, all they have to do is have me with their consent over the line, ask the teleservice center operator to read off of the MBR or the SID the line, the code that tells the exact medical disability. It's not a problem. It's never been a problem. The other thing too about the BPQI, it will tell you the severity of the medical problem, whether it's a plus one or a plus three or a plus seven. And generally, I tell people that if they have a plus one, they should sign up on the Ticket to Work program. If they have a plus three or plus seven, I'm told now not to tell people that they're never going to be found not disabled if they have a plus seven, even though if they don't follow through on the timely progress, because they're never going to be found medically not disabled. Regarding the independent work plan, okay, there's a couple, three questions I have about it. One is that how many alternate points of contact you want to have on the new one? One, as is on the form I've seen now, or more than one? Number two is that do you really need the information on the sheet, the page that gives the amount of money that they have made in the past 18 months or 16 months for hours per week when it really doesn't apply. All we're really interested in, if I'm not mistaken, is the amount of money they made per month. That's what we're looking at in terms of the look back. I'm waiting for your answer, please.
Hi, this is Kara. As far as the contacts go, that's up to you. It's up to whomever the signatory authority is for your entity. They could be listed as all, like some entities have one person in all three or four blocks, and some have different people who have different roles. It just depends on the organization, but do we need the blocks filled in? Absolutely.
You really need the number of hours per week on the employment?
No, that's not. I thought the question was the contacts.
No,
the contacts. Oh. Okay, the number of contacts. All right. One contact now or two or three? How many do you need? Because the new IWP has got only one contact.
Person. contact as far as contacting the beneficiary, you mean?
Alternate points of contact. Alternate points of contact. It's below, on the first page, you have the contact for the beneficiary. Then below that, you've got the block that says alternate points of contact, alternate contacts.
We don't have to have alternate. That's just if the beneficiary does have alternate contacts. That's up to them. As long as you have the beneficiary contact, the IWP is an agreement between you and them. That's
right,
your contract. So that's up to you. You just need to be able to reach them.
I was given to understand that we need at least 2 points of alternate contact, at least their name and telephone number, the alternate.
But that's your individual entity. But from Social Security's perspective, we do expect you to stay in touch with the beneficiary.
Right,
so
exactly.
But
we don't actually need, in order to get the IWP validated by Maximus, we don't actually need the alternate points of contact. Is that right?
No.
Okay.
And the money, the wage reporting that you're talking about, that's for the 18-month look back. So whatever information you have is helpful, and it allows, we have information as well on our sites, but sometimes you have more updated information than we have. So it helps to determine, and it helps you to know what milestone payments you will be entitled to.
Right, exactly. And that goes by month to month. It doesn't go by hours per week.
Correct. It does go by
month. I'm just curious as to why that is on the form. Do you understand what I'm getting at?
It's whichever is easiest for you.
Well, the easiest thing for me is to put down the place of employment and the amount of money they got per month.
And
that satisfies the conditions of the look-back.
Absolutely.
So I'm just curious as to why the rest of that stuff's on the form.
Are you looking at the new form?
Yeah, I'm looking at the new one and the old one.
I have the new one in front of me.
Okay, the new one's got where it talks about...
What page
are
you? I don't want to wait.
Just a minute, let me get it.
You know what? Why don't you contact me directly? I just think that might be easier. My information is Cara, C-A-R-A, dot C-A-R-A-E-L-A-N, at ssa.gov, or you can call me. It's 410-966-0586.
Okay. Now, the last thing is that about the information about their exact disability. You understand that? Because I used to work at Social Security, so I know it's on the Master Benefit Record. I know it's on the SID. It's coded. The disability is coded on there, and you can get it off of the 1-800 number. All you have to do is make sure that the EN person gets permission of the beneficiary over the line, just like we're doing now. You could have it a conference call, and then the teleservice center representative is supposed to give out the information.
Thank you for your input. We will publish the relevant policy regarding this for clarification. Thanks for your feedback. So, operator, we'll get a next caller.
And we have our next question. Please state your name, followed by your question. And caller, if you're on your speakerphone, please pick up your handset or depress your mute function. And we'll move on to our next question. Again, please state your name, followed by your question.
Hi, this is Andrea Satira again from TransEd Employment Network. I have a question for Peter on your collaboration. And I thought you mentioned that you have a job board with your employer partners in your program?
That's correct.
Okay. How does that get updated? Do the employers do that, go in and update it, or how do you work that?
Yeah, the employers would update it. In many cases, it's really the employer's, like, HR page. So it's updated in real time by the employers. And they just basically link that to our to our job board. So it's going to be updated by the employers virtually daily based on, you know, what's going on at their HR site.
Nice. I mean, it sounds like you've got this thing working, and it works real smooth. So I congratulate you. You have a lot of different forces, you know, into your program. So good for you. I'm learning a lot from you guys today.
And we'll take our next question. Again, caller, please give your name, followed by your question.
Hi, everybody. This is Susan Webb from Ability 360 in Phoenix. I have a couple of questions about the ChooseWork.net find help website. Also, it's actually two questions, but they're related. I noticed that we still are using the data, the profile, from, I believe, March of 2016. Have you compiled the satisfaction surveys yet and updated? When are you going to update those statistics on our individual entries on the directory, number one? And then we'd like to see, of course, the results of the satisfaction surveys in general, like you do every year. So that's my first question. The other one is that this is certainly an improvement over what it was before, but it does look like you've still got some work to do. And am I to understand that we cannot put in a search by state? We have to use a zip code, number one. And if I use a zip code and I say 60 miles, and I put in person, then I get the ENs that have in-person services within that 60 miles. But then if I go beyond 60 miles, then I'm not listed. And all of the other ENs are, the national ENs are listed, and that's even when you check in person, and they're not doing it in person if they're not in the state. So it sounds like maybe there's some work to do. And then I also noticed that the listings don't have the actual EN location on the front page, and I thought you said that that was going to be the case. So kind of update me on what I may have missed and what you're still working on, if you would.
So, hi, Susan. This is Rob. We obviously take feedback regarding the changes, and we will likely make additional tweaks as needed to make the site better. As you can imagine, this is a complicated process when we're, you know, sort of tearing this thing apart and trying to figure out how to, you know, put this up there and make it work in a better way. So I appreciate your feedback. Currently, we do only offer the zip code search for if you're looking for an EN within a specific location. But we appreciate your comments, and some other folks have mentioned concerns regarding not having the state search function. As far as the issues concerning going outside of 60-mile search radius, I don't have a readily available answer for you, and I'm not sure if Felix or anybody at TPM would be able to offer any comments on that, but at the very least, we can take a look at that and see what the situation is.
Okay, and then the satisfaction surveys?
So my staff, Laura, indicates that the data is still being compiled, so we'll keep you posted on that, as we move forward with that.
Okay. No estimate, though, as to when we can expect that, because now it's more than a year old. Nothing yet.
We'll get some kind of update for you by the next call for sure, okay?
Okay. Now, if we want to make suggestions about the website and some of the things they brought up, or I'm sorry, the find help function of the website, if we want to make suggestions about that rather than taking up time here, who do we send that to? Do we send that to EN Support Desk, or where do we send that?
Susan, this is Kara. Just send it to EN Service at ssa.gov, and we'll filter it to the correct people.
Okay. Will do. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yep.
And we have our next question. Again, please state your name followed by your question.
Hi, Ken Williams. Hi, this is Ken Williams over at Adelante Development Center. You guys hear me?
Yes, thank you.
So I just have an observation about the same site that Susan Webb was making reference to. Is there any way that we can bring more direction to the toggle switches by sort by provider type and alphabetical? And secondly, those toggle switches do not function. I've tried it on two browsers. You have to actually tag one and then tag the other one to get to get it to actually change. And then I also noticed under provider type, if you put in EN and all providers, under provider type, we don't come up, which other ENs do. And then under alphabetical, under EN and all service providers, then we do come up. So is there a way that we can get our EN listed on both provider type and alphabetical like other employment networks?
So first of all, we would ask that you forward your comments pertaining to the FindHelp tool to the EN service at ssa.gov mailbox. Just please try to be specific with your concern so that we know exactly what the issue is that you're experiencing, and then we can take it back and investigate and then provide feedback. I did not get the last part of your question, though. Could you repeat that?
Yeah, so under the different provider type and then alphabetical, there are some employment networks that are listed under both. If you just check off EN and then all service providers, there are ENs that are listed both under provider type and alphabetical. However, our EN is not listed under both. It's only listed under one or the other.
Gotcha. So what I would ask is that you include that specific issue in your message to the EN service at ssa.gov mailbox so that we can take a look into that, okay?
Yes, very good. Thanks, Robert. The improvements are fantastic, by the way.
I appreciate the feedback. Well, it's good to know that some folks, you know, like some of the needs to go, apparently, but we're getting there slowly but surely.
Yeah, no. I think that the improvements are fantastic, and the marketing efforts that Social Security is doing to the beneficiaries is outstanding. That's where most of our referrals are coming to, aside from us being involved in a marketing pilot program.
Well, we appreciate that feedback as well. I just want to let everybody know, relative to all the marketing, or rather all the POCs that Patrice walked us through, these are efforts that we are undertaking internally, and they're resource intensive. So we took this work in-house, but we did not get 10, 15 new hires to dedicate it for this work. We are repurposing our staff, existing staff. We are obviously, as I think if you've heard me speak about this in the past, we are working under very tight fiscal constraints over the last several years, budgetary constraints to run the program. So I just want to emphasize folks that we're doing the best we can. Please try to be patient with us. We would love to expand all of these efforts to the fullest extent possible because that would help the program and our beneficiaries. But we are just limited by how many folks we can dedicate to these efforts. I just want to reiterate that to everybody. So thank you, though.
Okay. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Ken, for participating today. We have reached at the end of our call. It is now 4:30. Any questions, you can please go ahead and forward them to the boxes that have been provided for you. And this concludes our call today. The next call will be August 17 at 3 p.m. Thank you, everyone.
And this concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.